How the hell did that happen? The water was really cold, and I thought I would throw myself into the deep end instead of slowly torturing myself by starting at the shallow end, I say, the panic of that day carrying me away like an undertow, before I laugh a little. It was stupid to think I was tall enough to stand up in 7 feet of water. Pretty stupid stretch. What were you thinking when it was happening? I was thinking about how I'd like to draw a comic where the hero is powerful but can't swim and finds himself drowning. You weren't thinking about your family and friends? The afterlife? Maybe how you should have taken swimming lessons as a kid? Nope. You're heartless, Thomas says. Is this big drowning scene for the comic you lied about letting me read? I didn't lie. I just keep putting it off because... You know what? Follow me. I don't want to be marked as a liar, so we head back to my apartment. I search for my Sun Warden comic as Thomas waits out in the hallway, and I decide I don't want to read this with him on his rooftop. I leave the comic on my bed and open the door. Get in here, I say. I thought you don't like having friends come over. I'm changing my mind in 5, 4, 3, 2... I hold off on the last second because Thomas isn't calling my bluff. Come on, don't make me look like an ass. Thomas steps inside. I watch his eyes as he takes in the apartment. I'm immediately self-conscious about the apartment smelling like wet laundry, like me crazy once said it did. I can't tell anymore. The first time baby Freddy came over, he immediately searched for the bedroom, not a big challenge, to see if he could catch a glimpse of the bed we all slept in. The concept was just so weird to someone who had his own bedroom. Brandon never judged, thankfully. And Thomas isn't judging now either. He moves past Eric's video games and over to my collection of comics before turning back to me. I want your Batcave. Shut up. You have your own room. I'll trade you. If you don't mind rooming with Eric, it's a done deal. We shake on it. Thomas picks up the Sun Warden comic, and we sit down on my bed, reading it together. It's crazy rewarding seeing someone laugh at jokes I doubted anyone else would find funny. He's also really impressed with this panel where Sun Warden launches a series of fireballs into the ruby eye of a cyclops who's dual-wielding mountainous swords. I worked so damn hard on getting that right. He reaches the last panel, where Sun Warden must decide on saving his girlfriend or best friend, and then looks up. Spoiler? I don't know what he's going to do, I shrug. I stop there. Thomas thinks for a moment, looking back down at the panel. Maybe SW could somehow split himself in two, like he taps into a new power because of his exposure to the Celestial Kingdom. He could save Amelia and Caldwell in one go, and then split himself more times, you know, to destroy the dragon with everyone blasting their sunshots at once. Thomas continues the story for what seems like another 10 minutes, and I pull out a notebook and draw a rough sketch of the diamond-tailed basilisk he wants me to include. When he talks about giving the basilisk the ability to shapeshift into an old man with Alzheimer's who can't recall his villainy, I cut him off and ask him to remind me about that idea for issue number 2. I'm still writing when he goes to the bathroom to piss, but when he comes back, he's different. I'm mortified that he saw something embarrassing, like my mom's bras, or maybe our hamper just fucking smells. Whatever it is, he isn't going to say anything. He would never do anything to make me uncomfortable. But he doesn't realize I can't just sit here and ignore it, so I just ask him what changed. What happened? The bathtub, Thomas says. It got me thinking. He doesn't have to go on. The image of someone's dad killing himself will do this to a person. To anyone. I'm sorry. Don't be. Who found him, Stretch? My mom, I say. I don't know why he did it, Thomas. My mom says he was never completely right in the head, like he had a bad temper and stuff, but I feel like he must have had some other life we didn't know about that drove him to do what he did. I stare at my lap, desperately trying to remember everything good about my dad, instead of getting pissed and sad again. We didn't even go to his funeral, because how do you look at someone who wanted to get away from you? Thomas sits down beside me and wraps his arm around my shoulders. We don't say anything, at least not for a couple minutes, and he tells me about how he still wonders about his own dad. He recognizes that it's different. My father committing suicide, his abandoning him, but probably alive. But it's still a loss. It changed everything. He doesn't really have a lot of great memories of his dad, except for this one time when his father took him fishing. But Thomas can't help but think about experiences they could have shared, like driving lessons, hockey games, and sex talks. "You think we'll be screwed without our dads?" I ask.
"I think we'll be screwed trying to figure out why they ditched us without explanation."
"But I have hope for us," Thomas says.
"Well, I'll have hope for you after I teach you how to ride a bike and swim."
"You're going to keep me busy, Stretch." I smile in spite of myself. His arm is still around me. None of my friends would ever comfort me this way. It's kind of, sort of, definitely different. I'm hardly heartless, like Thomas joked. He knows it, too. Chapter 14 4 A.M. Thoughts. Genevieve comes home tomorrow. Finally. She's taking a taxi from the airport, and she'll be expecting me to be outside her building when she gets there. And of course I'll be there. I haven't seen my girlfriend in 3 weeks, and I miss her a lot. I think it's the anxiety of seeing her that's keeping me awake long after everyone is asleep. Even Eric, whose double shifts are finally laying him out an hour after he gets home. I sit up and stare outside the window. It's dead out there. I have something I want to talk about, but it's not the kind of talk I can just have with anyone. It has to be the right someone. But that right someone is the reason I need to talk in the first place. I draw instead, because putting thought to page helps. It really does. I draw quick sketches of different things my friends like. Fat Dave likes wrestling games, where he can imagine he's someone fit. Baby Freddy loves baseball more than football, which his father wants him playing instead. Brendan loved being someone's son, instead of someone's grandson. Dion loves fighting. Skinny Dave just needs a blunt and a staircase to pee in, and he's good. Genevieve is at her happiest when she's in front of a canvas, even on the days she can't finish. And finally, Thomas likes boys. Just as no one ever had to tell me that Skinny Dave loves blazing, or how Brendan is falling down the black hole of drug dealing because his parents are in jail, I don't need anyone, even Thomas himself, to tell me he's gay. I think he might even like me, which makes zero sense because surely he could do better than a kid with a chipped tooth who's straight and taken. The thing is, I'm scared for Thomas. Maybe my friends won't care if he ever does decide to tell us. But what if they do? What if they can't accept he's just as naturally interested in other guys, like how me, Crazy, and Dion are prone to fighting? What if they try to beat something out of him that won't go away? I tear out the page from my sketchbook. I take one last look at my drawing of Thomas kissing a tall guy before I crumple it up. Part 2. A Different Happiness. Chapter 1. His Happy Birthday. We're in the elevator riding up to Genevieve's apartment, her luggage under my arms. She's pressed up against me and says, "You got to come next year. The instructor taught me so much on shadowing you could use for your comics, and also..." Her confidence in our future should put me at ease, and it's a reminder that I'm doing everything right. We could get stuck in this elevator right now, and I won't freak out, even if she wants to keep rambling on about art camps and colleges and neighborhoods we'll move to and other grown-up shit. She goes inside her apartment to double-check that her father's not home before inviting me in. She catches me up on who were her friends out there, how much she hated pissing in the woods one day during a long hike, and then tells me, "I have a surprise." I follow her into her bedroom, and she pulls out a 10x10 painting from her suitcase. She finished something. It's a dark-haired girl with silver binoculars gazing up at the attic window of a house. Instead of finding worn and forgotten furniture, she finds a starry universe boxed into the corners of the attic and a glowing constellation of a boy reaching out to her. Holy shit, I love this. I'm sitting down to admire every last detail when she takes it away from me. She sets the painting down and straddles my lap. She takes off my shirt, plays with my growing patch of chest hair, and skims my jawline with the tip of her finger. Missing you was my breakthrough, I think. We can't ever be apart for that long again. She rests her forehead against mine. I missed you too, I say. And even though I look her in the eyes, it doesn't feel all that right anymore. I mean, I did miss her. Kind of. Not as much as I should have, but she was always on my mind. Kind of always on my mind. I flip her over onto the bed. I pull out a condom from my jeans as we strip down. I don't slip it on yet because I haven't quite taken off yet. I'm psyching myself out too much. She grabs me and I close my eyes because if I see her disappointed, I'll somersault out the window. The memory of Thomas taking his shirt off, running into the sprinklers and doing push-ups overcomes me. And as much as I try to push it out of my mind to focus on my beautiful girlfriend, suddenly all systems are a go. Thomas is not Genevieve. And Genevieve is not Thomas, so this terrible ping-pong in my head over them is bullshit. They both play very different roles in my life. I know this, I swear I do. Genevieve is the girl I love, and the one I will always miss more whenever there's distance between us. Thomas is just my best friend, the one I trust a lot, but he won't ever get any secrets out of me that I can't tell Genevieve. So what if Genevieve won't race up bleachers with me or care to count trains go by? So what if sometimes I randomly smell Thomas's cologne on a stranger and instantly relive our hangouts? If I were faced with Sun Warden's decision, whether or not to save his girlfriend or best friend from a dragon. I'm sorry to change my mind, but Thomas would fall away without me moving a muscle, and I would make that choice without a doubt because the bottom line is that Genevieve is my girlfriend and I'm her boyfriend and Thomas and I are just friends and that's that. All this doesn't mean I can't celebrate Thomas's existence on the exact day my girlfriend returns after a 3-week leave. He matters too much to be dicked over by friends 2 years in a row. Thomas has strict instructions not to come up here on the roof until I go down to get him. I'm the only one who got him a gift, naturally. Well, baby Freddy stole 3 bottles of raspberry Smirnoff from his mother's liquor cabinet. That kid might be a flaky punk bitch every now and again, but he definitely respects any opportunity to get twisted. I'm hoping Thomas doesn't think my gift is ridiculous or silly like Genevieve did when I told her what it was. I impulsively bought a few cheap lanterns from a discount store on the way over here, but only 2 glow his favorite shade of green. We're blasting Brendan's Get Kronk playlist from his stereo dock, and Skinny Dave is already grinding with our neighbor Crystal, while her friend hovers by the dollar store cakes I bought. I really wanted to get him an ice cream cake from his old job and make it special, shaped like a director's slate or something. But it costs too much money, which sucks.
"Bangin' party," Brendan says after setting the stereo down.
"Didn't know you had it in you after your beach party bombed."
"I was 12, and Orchard Beach sucks. Let it go." I look over. Genevieve is on her 2nd drink. She's been chatting with me crazy for 10 minutes. That's an unhealthy amount of time to spend with him alone. Can you go save Genevieve from Psycho over there? I walk off, and he calls me back. Where are you going? I'm getting Thomas. I haven't seen him all day. Only spoke with him at midnight last night to wish him a happy birthday, and again a couple of hours ago to let him know we'd be setting up soon. I miraculously shepherded everyone up to the roof without managing to get into a fight with the Joey Rosa kids.
I hope you throw me an awesome party like this, Brendan says,
and it reminds me of that time in fifth grade when he and baby Freddy competed over who would be my best friend on the school bus. Some friendships can never be as simple as sharing. I climb down the fire escape and knock on Thomas's window before sitting on the windowsill. He's at his desk, shirtless, and reading something in his journal before looking up with a smile.
Happy birthday, yo. You writing down your words of wisdom for the day?
Thomas nods.
Nah, I did that earlier. I was reading what I wrote at the end of my birthday last year. I was an angsty little guy.
Rightfully so, but you got it good upstairs. We probably shouldn't have invited me crazy to a rooftop where he'll be drinking, but we'll cross that bridge later.
Like when he throws one of us off?
I think we're all safe except Skinny Dave. He really likes throwing him around.
I owe you 100 fist bumps for putting this together for me. I can't wait to read my journal tomorrow after I drunk write my entry tonight.
He gets up and walks over to his closet. I look at the posters around his room so I can stop staring at his back. He catches me up about all the great phone calls he got today from his family and the birthday card from his mother with $250 inside.
Not sure this party will beat a card with that much money.
Boo,
someone says behind me. I jump and almost hit my head on the raised window. It takes me a second to register that it's Genevieve. We have been taking a few minutes to come up. Not surprised she's checking on us. Jan looks into the room, and Thomas is standing there, covering his bare chest with a striped tank top, and she looks back at me.
Is Party Central happening down here now? Let's go up and drink! Woo!
I'm not Genevieve's biggest fan when she's hitting the bottle, because she turns into this party girl she always regrets being the next morning. She shifts my head toward her and kisses me intensely, her tongue tasting like raspberry vodka and cranberry juice as she shoves it down my throat. You would think she's expecting Thomas to leave so we can use his bed. She squeezes my hand and leads me back up to the roof. Thomas follows a few steps behind. Some of my friends cheer for Thomas, while others keep drinking or spitting game to the other four girls. Thomas points at one of the glowing lanterns, says it's cool, picks it up, and it immediately dies.
Well, that happened.
I offer to get him and Genevieve a drink, well, another drink for her, and leave them chatting. Fat Dave walks over to me with a red Solo cup filled to the brim. It spills over his hand.
Cheers to your girl's nice tits.
Cheers, I say without a drink. I fill up three cups, 20% liquor, 80% juice, for Jen's sake. Then I carry them, two in my hand, one in my mouth, back to Thomas and Genevieve. I hand them off right as Thomas asks Genevieve,
"Are you a witch?"
And I'm kind of confused on the crazy turns this conversation must have taken. What the...
He thinks I'm a witch because...
Genevieve races over to her abandoned tote bag on the floor, spilling half her drink along the way. Which is for the best. She comes back with a deck of odd-looking cards, wrapped around with a blue ribbon.
Of these? Tarot cards. I made these during the retreat. I used strips of bark instead of paper to give them an otherworldly look.
That was a real witch-like thing to say, I comment.
Burn, witch, burn, Thomas says with a smile.
Stretch says you used to be really into horoscopes. I'm more of a fortune cookie kind of guy.
Fortune cookies can be cracked open by anyone, she counters.
It's about taking a chance, Thomas defends. It's much easier to follow than all the conflicting horoscopes forecasted everywhere. She holds in a burp before arguing.
That's why horoscopes are better.
If your fortune promises you wealth by the end of the day and you go home poor, then you were lied to. But if your reading from a psychic's website is wrong, maybe the one in the newspaper is right. This conversation is beyond dumb. Someone shoot me. Now. Twice.
So why'd you stop?
Genevieve spins her cup around and stares into the mini whirlpool before downing it all in one gulp.
Because I was tired of my many expectations not being met.
Well, I'll have to trade you a fortune cookie for a psychic reading one day, Thomas says.
I swear, Jen's face flushes.
He's playing the game close to his chest.
I normally wouldn't care, except it's with my girlfriend.
You should go get some cake before everyone eats it all, I say.
We're skipping right to the eating because this is hardly the Let's Sing Happy Birthday crowd.
Cake!
Excuse me, Thomas says, patting Genevieve on her shoulder before racing to the corner. We follow him, and all moan when Me Crazy dips his finger into the icing and steals a bite. Others grab plates, and some just dig in with a fork. Once Me Crazy grabs a handful of cake, the cake is his and his only. Sorry, Thomas.
I sit down on the ground, and Genevieve relaxes right into my lap, eating cake and drinking it down with another cup of booze. Part of me would love to volunteer someone else to hold her hair back later tonight, but the part of me who loves her is ready for the job.
Thomas joins us with a pathetic slice of cake.
So, I still haven't asked you how New Orleans was, Genevieve.
That's okay. I still haven't wished you a happy birthday.
I mouth, "She's drunk," to him, and he shrugs it off.
New Orleans was great. I'm hoping to drag Aaron with me next summer. I think I fell in love when I was down there.
She puts down her drink and takes my hand, gripping it hard like we're about to arm wrestle.
In love with the city. I mean, since I have the boy I love here.
I see that, Thomas says.
Stretch doesn't shut up about you.
Genevieve leans back and kisses me hard again, her tongue completely out of sync with mine.
Then she picks her cup and fork right back up, stands, and taps the fork against the plastic like it's going to chime and steal everyone's attention.
Who wants to play a game?
Spin the bottle, Fat Dave shouts.
Hell no.
Seriously, the dudes-to-chick ratio is like the dude-to-chick ratio at a boxing match.
Flip cup, Brendan shouts.
There's no fucking table up here to play on.
Kings, Dion says.
Great, a drinking card game without cards.
7 minutes in heaven, Crystal suggests,
laughing so hard and obnoxiously that she could tumble over the ledge and I wouldn't move a muscle.
I was thinking, two truths and a lie, Genevieve announces to everyone's applause.
How to play two truths and a lie. Everyone shares three stories or facts about themselves, and then you take turns figuring out everyone's lie. It's the perfect icebreaker game.
Problem. I don't like a Genevieve who knows this game.
You start, birthday boy, Genevieve says. Everyone gathers around while Thomas counts off what he's going to say with his fingers.
Okay, I got it. I worship Walt Disney. I worship Steven Spielberg. I worship Martin Scorsese.
You don't worship Disney, Baby Freddy says. Who worships a guy who created princess movies?
Who worships another guy, period, Brendan adds.
You don't worship Martin Scorsese. I answer before anyone else can say something stupid.
You think he's cool, but you're not hanging up posters of him around your room.
Thomas nods and raises his cup.
So it's my turn now, right? I ask Genevieve.
She throws back the rest of her drink.
Let's see who knows you best, babe.
I really wish we were playing Kings or Flip Cup or even Spin the Bottle right now.
I'm great at tic-tac-toe, I love skateboarding, I hate a lot of Spanish music.
You're Puerto Rican, so you definitely love Spanish music, Dion says.
Yeah, and you probably shake your hips to it while skateboarding, Skinny Dave says.
You're not great at tic-tac-toe, Genevieve agrees less offensively.
You don't skateboard. You skate on rollerblades, Thomas says.
I point at him and click my tongue. He's right. I turn to Skinny Dave.
When the fuck have you seen me skateboard around the block?
No way you're good at tic-tac-toe, Genevieve shouts. I beat you all the time.
He beat me every time we played the other night, Thomas says.
Genevieve rakes her hand through her dark hair, and she looks super ill, like she could throw up any minute now.
I guess it's your turn again, Thomas.
No, please, you go.
She covers her face with her hand. I think she does this so we can't detect any lie, or she's actually about to throw up on me.
I'm ready.
I grew up wanting to be a ballerina and an actress and a nurse. For a drunk girl, her tone remains so steady, I think every single one can be true. Everyone's about to start shooting guesses when she holds her hand out.
Let Aaron go first.
Which is the lie, babe?
You never wanted to be a ballerina. Come on, that was easy.
Yeah, she says to my relief.
Bluffing FTW.
I'm about to offer my turn to someone else when Genevieve stands up a little wobbly. She raises one arm above her head and trails one leg up the other until she kind of resembles a flamingo. A wasted flamingo.
I wanted to be a ballerina badly. Own tights and everything.
She stumbles, and baby Freddy catches her.
I was never good enough, so I mock the girls who are.
She sits down next to me and nudges my shoulder with hers.
I guess you forgot.
Skinny Dave and Fat Dave hiss like something is sizzling, and Me Crazy chimes in with,
You got burned!
I glance at everyone clockwise. Brendan unties his shoelaces so he can tie them again. Thomas pulls out his phone, and I bet anything he's typing nonsense to no one. And everyone else is just drinking or looking like they feel very fucking sorry for me. Maybe they feel sorry for her.
It's only a game, Genevieve says, shrugging.
Thomas, you should totally open up Aaron's present.
Holy shit, my girlfriend has the biggest balls ever.
Present time!
Thomas shouts, killing zero tension. Crystal's drunk friend tosses Thomas the gift-wrapped present.
It's nothing big, I say.
Thomas unwraps it and rocks forward, laughing.
This is awesome!
It's a toy, Genevieve says.
It's Buzz Lightyear!
Thomas breaks Buzz free from the box and presses a button on his wrist. Red lights blink. Fat Dave asks,
From Toy Story?
Me Crazy says,
Me Crazy likes the talking piggy bank.
Thomas goes into the whole story about how his asshole father said he would give him Buzz Lightyear for his 9th birthday and just drove away.
I've been waiting for this guy for so long.
Thanks, Stretch.
He reaches over and we fist bump.
Nope. Not good enough.
Get up.
I stand, and he full-on hugs me. None of this one-arm hug with a pat on the back nonsense. Reasons why I'm feeling warm right now. 1. I downed my drink pretty quickly on a fairly empty stomach. 2. Everyone on the roof is staring at us. 3. My unspeakable truth.
No homo.
No homo, I say back. Everyone resumes drinking, but Thomas sticks around.
Stretch, seriously. Best birthday since I celebrated my 6th birthday at Disney World. Getting me Buzz Lightyear just made you beat Mickey Mouse.
I mean, Mickey Mouse never stood a chance, did he?
I have an idea on how I could top this night on your birthday.
It's not a competition, dude.
Game on.
Thomas says with a smile. He leaves to grab another drink. Maybe an hour or so later, the bottles are all empty, and everyone clears out. I stop helping Thomas clean up because Genevieve is pretty damn drunk and needs to get home. So we bounce. I've been trying to hail her a cab for a couple minutes now without much luck. If the tension between us were a person, I would snap its neck and kick the corpse for good measure.
I'm losing you again, Genevieve cries.
No, you're not, Jen.
Yes, I am! Yes, the fuck I am!
She's crying harder, and I don't know what to say. A cab pulls up, and she opens the door.
Do you want me to go with you?
You shouldn't have to fucking ask if you should fucking take me home, Aaron! I try to follow her into the cab, but she pushes me back.
Not tonight.
I'm going home alone to go punch a pillow or something. We can figure this out tomorrow. She closes the door, and the cab takes off. I should chase after the cab. But the impulse isn't there. In my head, I play a round of one truth and a lie. I need Thomas to be happy. I need Genevieve to be happy. I can't keep lying to myself about the truth. Chapter 2. The War Inside Me. It's been non-stop raining the past couple of days, which sucks for a lot of reasons. Genevieve has been using it as an excuse for why she can't hang with me, even if I know it's because she wants more time away from me. I can't play any card games with Thomas on his rooftop, or go on any job hunting adventures with him. And I can't stay outside and lose myself in a game of Manhunt, or Skellzies, or anything without risking pneumonia. If there's anything worse than being stuck in the smallest home ever with thoughts I shouldn't be left alone with, it's being stuck while coughing all over my brother's stuff, who will in turn get sick and then cough all over my stuff, and will get me sick again in a cruel, cruel cycle of screwing each other over until we're both so immune we could eat candy off the floor of Washington Hospital's ER. But Mom has tasked me with post office duty today. My little cousin's birthday is tomorrow, and she needs me to overnight a gift to Albany. The umbrella I leave with gets its ass kicked by the wind within 2 minutes, and while paying $20 for an umbrella has always seemed excessive to me, having to buy a new $5 umbrella every single time it rains just seems like shitty math on my behalf. I walk the block to the post office, my bad mood growing heavier like a backpack of big-ass bricks I'm calling the war inside me. The heaviest bricks are Genevieve hates me, and I don't know what to do with Thomas, and I still miss Dad. The last brick weighs the most right now. This is the first time I've come near his old workplace since we lost him. When I was a kid, I'd pretend I was a security guard outside the bedroom door, and only Mom would entertain my high-five fee if she wanted to enter, whereas Eric would storm past me. The package is getting wet, and I'm risking pneumonia, so I rush inside before I can change my mind and walk the 12 blocks to the second nearest post office. The line isn't too bad. No one here recognizes me as the kid of the security guard who killed himself, so that's a plus. The clerk hands me my receipt, and on my way out, I spot Evangeline sitting down on the wooden bench by the envelopes and stationery, writing a postcard. Evangeline!
Hey!
I say. She looks up.
Hey, kiddo. What brings you here?
Mailing some plush giraffe to my little cousin for her birthday. Who you writing to?
I broke some hearts back in London and promised to keep in touch. Didn't give them my email either. It's better this way.
Evangeline shows me all of the 10 postcards she's sending out. She signs her name and writes today's date on a Yankee Stadium postcard. Philip was a sweet one, but his brother was falling for me, too. I couldn't come between family.
So the brother isn't getting a postcard?
No. I've already shipped him a letter, asking him to stop writing me. Evangeline makes room for me on the bench, and shuffles all her postcards as she tells me, "Anyway, thought I would hang around here and get these sent out before the siren song of unread books back home captures me."
How are you doing?
I'm really wet.
Another reason I'm hiding out here. I'm not sure why I feel the sudden urge to confess to my former babysitter, but maybe it's because she's both a stranger and someone I trust. I'm really missing my dad pretty hard this week. I just don't know why the hell he would leave us, you know? I breathe in and out. In and out. In and out. Trying to push the anger back down, but instead it beats me, and I spit out. It's affecting my relationship with Genevieve, who thinks she's losing me, and I don't know.
Is she losing you?
I think I'm kind of, sort of, definitely losing myself right now.
In what way, kiddo?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just growing up.
You mean you're done playing with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toys?
They were action figures, Evangeline. I feel a little better talking to someone outside the universe of my problems, but I don't know if I want to fill her in on how someone who doesn't have much direction is seriously disorienting me. I should probably get home and see if Genevieve is in the mood to answer my calls. Or go fucking punch myself if she isn't.
Language, Evangeline says.
The babysitter never died in you, did it?
Afraid not, kiddo.
She mails out her postcards and walks me back home under her large yellow umbrella. I don't even change into dry clothes before jumping onto my bed and calling Genevieve. I'm not really sure I even know what I would say, but it still sucks when she doesn't answer. Chapter 3 Side A. If I could afford a Lateo procedure, I'd give Genevieve the money so she could forget me. But since that's never going to happen, I'm outside trying to sketch what our future will look like if we stick together. The page is still blank. It's been a week since Thomas's birthday, and despite another awkward phone call last night, I'm still pretty sure Genevieve doesn't believe I love her anymore. I put down my notebook when I see Me Crazy coming through the gates, his head craned back and fingers pinching his bloody nose. Brendan, Skinny Dave, and Baby Freddy are all behind him. I rush over. What happened?
Nosebleed?
Me Crazy says, laughing.
Nosebleed after beating down some Joey Rosa dick suckers, Skinny Dave says, hopping up and down and smacking his fists like he was a part of the fight.
Whenever we brawled with kids from the Joey Rosa projects, he always bitched out and hid in bodegas or behind trash cans. What the fuck did they do to you? Brendan sits Me Crazy down on the bench.
We were walking by when the usual suspects ran their mouths because we partied on your boy's roof. Danny blew a kiss at Me Crazy and got his shit rocked.
Me Crazy wrecked them all, Skinny Dave shouts. Baby Freddy and Skinny Dave are walking to Good Foods to grab some tissues, and I hear them recapping their favorite part of the fight, when Me Crazy made Danny kiss the bottom of his boot 7 times. I don't even think Danny is gay, but that kind of stuff just sets Me Crazy off like little white party poppers. He's fucking insane. But at least he's on our side. And here's one of my problems. If I don't choose Genevieve, I'll find myself on the receiving end of a boot to the face. Before I head out to meet Genevieve, I suddenly have a big to-do list. It ranges from balling up socks to color-coding my comics to add some life to my corner of the living room. But I snap out of it because I'm excited to see her, or at least I'm telling myself I am, because it's how I would have behaved if I were going to see Thomas.
On the phone last night, Genevieve mentioned there's a flea market opening up today, and I invited myself along because that's what a good boyfriend does. When I see her, I make it a point to tell her something really nice about herself, like how much I love the constellation of freckles running down from her neck to her shoulder blade. I'm trying to prove to her that she's my universe, and I orbit within her. Simple as that. I learned how to be this way because of my friends. Not directly, of course, since Brendan blasts his way through girls, and Skinny Dave is always texting multiple prospects simultaneously. But anti-role models are just as enlightening. And at the very least, she seems to appreciate the effort. Or she pretends she does. The flea market is packed. We pass by boring vendors selling buttons, shoelaces, tube socks, and underwear. She tries on some emerald earrings by one table, and I walk off a little bit to find a comic worth buying. I check out the next table, and there's a sign that reads, Vintage Video Games. They have the old Nintendo cartridges for Pac-Man and Super Mario Bros. 3 and Castlevania, all priced for $20 or more with a marker. I nod at the guy in the Zelda shirt and move on to the next table with all these fridge magnets. I consider buying one for Thomas. But that would just be an excuse to go see him, so I don't, even though there are words crawling around my brain that I want to come out and say. I turn, and Genevieve isn't at the jewelry table anymore. I tiptoe and find her waving me down. I make my way to her, and she's holding a blue moleskin sketchbook. What do you think? I want to make sure you actually like it before I surprise you with it. I don't need a new notebook, I say. I still have enough spiral notebooks with loose leaf I haven't used up yet. But do you want a new one? No thanks. I know she's not some rich girl, but she's definitely much better off than I am with her own bedroom and weekly allowances. She doesn't really understand want versus need like we do at home. Just because you can afford something doesn't mean you have to have it. Things I want. New video games. Trendier sneakers. A laptop with Photoshop. A home with enough bedrooms so friends can stay over. Things I need. Food and water. Coats and boots during the winter. A home to come home to no matter how small. A girlfriend like Genevieve. And a best friend like Thomas, instead of a sort of best friend like Brendan. Genevieve grabs my hand, and I fake a smile. I notice she's still a little unhappy herself. Later that night, there's a knock on the door. Eric's about to leave for his overnight inventory shift, and Mom is laid out from her double. I sometimes catch myself mistaking a knock on the door for Dad without his keys. It'll be a while until I shake that off, I think. Normally, my friends call for me outside the window. I pause my game and pray it's not someone ding-dong ditching me, because so help me God. I open the door, and it's Thomas. Hey, he says with a smile. I smile back. You game to come over tonight? He asks after I say nothing. I've made progress on my life chart and thought we could catch up. Been a while. Yeah. 8 days since I last saw him, and 10 hours since we last texted. I should really stay home and rest, because I'm spending the day with Genevieve again tomorrow. But if I stay, I'll be up all night anxious over how I could have been helping him figure out who he is so he isn't walking around blind and lost. Yeah, I'm down. Give me a sec. I go back inside to turn off the Xbox, and Eric is eyeing me like he knows all my secrets and lies. It's the same look he had the day I left home to go have sex for the first time. I let Mom sleep, since I'll be home before she even wakes up during the middle of the night to pee. To avoid all our friends in the court, I lead Thomas out of the back staircase. It smells like recently lit weed. I put a hand on Thomas's chest to stop him, so we can listen out for anyone down there. When I don't hear anything, we go down and bump into Brendan and this girl, Nate. Nate's real name is Natalie, but she's been reinventing herself as a dude for the past 4 years with thick braids, fake gold medallions, fitted hats, and basketball jerseys. Brendan looks at Thomas, but asks me,
"What are you doing here, eh?"
"Heading out." I see the packet of weed in his hand. "You?"
"Business," Brendan says.
"You would have been busted if I was a security guard," I say.
"Nah, their loud-ass keys always give them up."
"I could have been someone who'd have snitched."
"My grandfather doesn't care what I do to bring home paper,"
Brendan says, rubbing his fingers together.
"I should finish up here."
"Yeah," I say. When we leave, I hear Brendan ask Nate something.
"You sure you don't like guys?"
We stop into Good Foods, and Thomas buys Pop-Tarts, sour candy, and enough bags of potato chips for a party of six. It's nice out, so we go up to his roof and play cards. It's a little dark, but Thomas saved a green paper lantern from his birthday that miraculously still works. I tear into the sour candy and ask him,
"So, what's new with your future?" "I figured out something big about who I want to be."
Thomas downs his top pop and burps.
"Or more like, who I don't want to be."
I don't know if it's the sugar or where he could be going with this, but I'm a little shaky.
"And who's that?" "I don't want to be a director," Thomas says.
Exactly the kind of thing you expect to hear from someone who is so young and lost.
"I just don't think I'm as passionate about it as I thought I was. Think about it. I haven't ever filmed anything or even put up a video on YouTube. All I do is look up directors and watch movies as if that's all it takes."
"But you've been writing scripts," I say. He shrugs.
"I don't have any real stories to tell. I can write all the scripts I want, but I'm only 17 and haven't lived anything interesting enough to write about. When your life sucks, your story sucks."
"Sometimes your story is worth reading because your life sucks," I say.
"And I don't think your life sucks." "Sure it does. I don't know what I want to do when I'm older. You're my only real friend. My mother is always working and never has time for me, and my father might be dead for all I know."
Thomas immediately looks up at me, horrified.
"I'm sorry, that was such a dickhead thing to say."
I want to tell him that it's okay, that it's not like my father killed himself because of me, but that will only sound like his father left because of him. So I say nothing. It's quiet, except for the wind. I throw a rock back onto the ground. "I think it's okay for you to be confused by things right now, Thomas.
We're young and figuring shit out, but our lives don't completely suck.
Take it from the kid whose bedroom is the living room.
I just want the future figured out, you know?"
He grins.
"Maybe we should invite your girlfriend up here with her tarot cards to lay it all out for us."
"I'm not sure how much longer we'll be dating," I say, looking down.
"Why's that?"
Thomas asks, and I can see from the corner of my eyes that he's lowered his head, too.
"Things aren't what they once were, and I think I'm going to take a page out of your book and put some distance between me and her."
I'm tugging at my sleeve now. Something I used to do as a kid whenever I got really nervous.
"I love her, and I want to know her forever, but we don't fit." "I get that."
I'm staring very hard at my hands now. I feel weird talking like this.
Do guys do this kind of thing? Hang out and talk about love?
"You ask that like you haven't been a guy your entire life.
Some dudes make their mind a prison. I like living outside of bars.
If we're different, that's fine with me. He's right. I will dare to be different. I will prove to everyone that the world won't turn to ash or spin out of control or be swallowed alive by a black hole. But someone has to man up first to get this ball rolling. There's something I want to tell you, but it has to stay between us, I say. The words almost sound like they're being spoken by someone else. And you can't go running away. Please tell me you have a superpower, like you're actually a descendant from aliens or something. I've always wanted to be the best friend in a superhero movie who keeps the superhero secret, Thomas says. Sorry, too many movies. Of course you can trust me, Stretch. There's two sides to this, and I'm not sure I'm ready to tell you both yet. But I want to, soon. Okay. So tell me side A now, or whenever you're ready. I look down again, and massage my temples, my head ready to explode from what I'm about to admit. Look, you're my best friend and everything, but if what I'm about to tell you is too much for you, it's fine, and shut up and talk to me, Thomas interrupts. That's kind of a mixed signal. He stares at me with shut-up-and-talk eyes. Okay. No wasting time. I'm going to come out and say it. I think I might, maybe, kind of, sort of, possibly be... Is this fill-in-the-blank? No, I can say it. Let me say it. I'm going to say it. I think I might, kind of... Sort of. Possibly. No. Definitely. I can't spit the last word out. The unknown of everything that will come after choking me. Maybe it would actually help you if I guessed. Should we try that? Okay. You're a virgin. Nope. You're a descendant of aliens. Still no.
I'm out of guesses.
Let me tell you something about me. I don't care if you're a gigantic virgin who's part alien. You're Stretch, and nothing you say is going to change that. I hide in my hands, and then dig my nails into my head as if I can tear off my face and unmask the person I'm trying to reveal. Okay. Yeah. I kind of... Maybe... Sort of... Might. I think I might. I like guys. Okay? And then I sit here, unable to take the words back. I wait for the world to spin out of control, or worse, for Thomas to get up and walk away. That's it? Kind of, maybe, sort of. Okay. So what? I look up. And the sky isn't bleeding. I hear cars honking, and drunk people shouting. Birds are still flying, and stars are coming out of hiding. Like me. Kids my age are having their first kisses right now, or even taking it a step further. Everything, life, is continuing. You don't care? I care about you. But I don't care about that. I mean, I do care, but I don't care in that way you think I care. Thomas scratches his head and whistles. You know what I mean, right? I don't care that you're gay. Can we maybe use a different word? I'm still wrapping my head around this. He gives me a thumbs up. Dude, this is your business. If a code word makes you feel more comfortable... I'm in. I don't have anything in mind. How about dude-liker? It sounds pretty matter-of-fact. Yeah, I say. It sucks how a word that's supposed to mean happiness can somehow feel warped. It's your call, dude-liker. So no one knows? Trust us,
I say.
Not even Jen. I'm going to figure out how to handle that when I understand what's going on with me. Maybe it happens like this for all dude-likers, where one day you're a girl-liker and the next day you're not. I guess maybe I could be a girl-slash-dude-liker, but I don't know. Thomas readjusts himself, coming a little toward me, or maybe just leaned my way for a second. So, what do you think changed everything? You did, I want to say, but don't. It's quiet. This silence makes me uncomfortable, like I'll never be comfortable again. If I play my cards wrong, I'll not only lose my privacy, but maybe rob myself of my happiness, too. I've been thinking about my happy ending even more than usual. Probably because you're trying to engineer yours right now. I don't think I'll ever be happy until I figure out who I am, and it comes down to me not being 100% happy with the life I have.
Do you mind being a dude-liker?
I don't know yet. Obviously, I'm scared for my throat being a dude-liker around here, but I'm not exactly rushing to tell everyone tomorrow. I also don't think I'll be campaigning anytime soon with other dude-liker-friendly organizations. I mean, if they can create a future where I can get married to another dude without it seeming like a big deal, then good on them. I'll remember to send a fruit basket or something. Thomas laughs, and I know this is it. This is when he confesses that he's been pranking me, and dropping signs he likes guys too, just to get me to say it.
Fruit basket? Pun intended?
You're an asshole, and I hate you. He's rocking back and forth, and when his laugh finally winds down, though I wouldn't have minded watching him for a few more seconds, he says,
"So what's next? Are you on the hunt for a guy in your happy ending?"
I have zero clue. Thomas inches toward me, for sure this time, and folds his hands in his lap.
Well, this all kind of reminds me of that blackout a few years ago. Remember?
I was outside when it happened, and it was so dark out I could barely see my own hand, let alone what was up the street. But I kept going forward, step by step, until I reached a familiar corner. Sometimes, you just have to push ahead to find what you're looking for.
Do you still have the fortune cookie you ripped that off of?
Nah, had to get rid of the evidence.
I smile, and like earlier, it feels legit, because it always is with him. But there's still a sinking feeling in my chest. I don't know what else I can say to him that'll make him feel comfortable enough to do what I just did. Since he doesn't ever lie, I wonder what he would say if I just directly asked him if he likes dudes, too. If he says no, I would know that he is capable of lying. But if he says yes, I don't know how I would feel by dragging it out of him like that.
Maybe you look distressed, or maybe I'm a mind reader, but I want you to know that nothing is different, Stretch. Sure, you do things differently, and that's okay.
Nothing is changing, Thomas says. And he wraps his arm around my shoulder as if this were ordinary. This is the guy who makes me happy. Thanks for being telepathic, I say. I pat his knee.
So, I guess this means I'm no longer allowed to call no homo anymore, right?
It doesn't matter. Thomas laughs, and I want every night to be like this, where we can just laugh against each other without it being weird. But for tonight, this is enough. From the shapes cast by the green paper lantern, you would never know that there were two boys sitting closely to one another, trying to find themselves. You would only see shadows hugging, indiscriminate.
Chapter 4 Remember that time. Instead of manning up, I've been standing outside in the pouring rain for the past 20 minutes under Genevieve's window. A cab with an ad for the Lateo Institute drives through a